Hello and welcome to Pitch and Play, a podcast about pitching games and then playing them between myself, Ross, and would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I would love that privilege to introducing myself rather than having somebody else do it. My name is Cassie.
Yeah, and I guess as the concept of the show is we will be, we're longtime old friends who've known each other from, well, how long is it now? Like 15-ish years?
Oh, God.
I know.
Like at least 10 years? Longer than that. Yeah, 10 to 15, sure.
Yeah, yeah. We basically both like video games and have different experiences with them. And we thought, well, I would say that we share similar interests at time with video games, but at the same time, we do diverge. Well, not completely, but like in our own paths and our own.
There are overlapping interests. Yeah. Yeah. Things that we have in common, things that we're very different on. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea was, I guess, you know, people always recommend you to play video games and you never do. And here's a great way to actually be kept to account. And so we will pitch each other a video game that we have played ourselves and we'll pitch to the other person and say, like, something interesting about it or why we really liked it. And we will try and, I guess, convince the person that it's worth the time and effort. And then they will go off and play it and see if they have a similar experience or a different one and a different opinion and sort of discuss it after that point. And I guess as well, we will be doing spoilers when it comes to those sort of discussions between after the play period.
Yeah, we'll try to keep the pitches, like, for the most part, as much as possible, spoiler-free, because it's meant to be, like, an introduction to the game. But obviously, to discuss a game in any kind of meaningful fashion, it's going to involve spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't tiptoe around too many of the topics.
It wouldn't be worth listening to.
Definitely not. Oh, I love this gameplay. What's it about? You won't know until you
I'll tell you in another 15 or 20 hours.
Oh, God, yeah. Hopefully we're not playing... Well, no, ignore that.
There are some long games on that list.
There are some long games on a list that we've already started to generate. And yes, I mean, we've already got the clear divide, I suppose, of... I wouldn't say... Well, okay, I would say that I probably play maybe more AAA games than yourself, or have played at least over several years. And you have played more indie stuff. And yeah, not to say that neither of us dislike the other type of game, but just...
And I wouldn't crown myself like indie queen or anything like that. I like weird things and stupid things. And that tends to be a lot of indie games. So,
it's a more interesting space in so many ways. So, yeah. Cool. So I guess it's also worth noting, like, at least in my case, I have a very big interest in games because I do work in video games. I work in mobile games, which means most of my audience is not probably the typical one that would be playing most of the games that I play.
Okay, not the AAA gamer. You're not here working on Fortnite or something. Yeah.
No, I mean, literally the game I'm working on is a casual game, so it's the antithesis of a lot of games where you have to have constant, like, attention and focus, and they have so many credits, but I'm not here to, like, justify why mobile games are good. But yeah, it means that I probably am going to take more of a, professional's not the right word, I suppose analytical mind when it comes to looking at these things, because how long have I been working in the industry now? It's like over 7 years. So there's a lot of takes that I'll have that maybe people who just play games won't.
Yeah, there's like design and behind the scenes stuff that is quite often invisible to the player. But once you've once you get into that, like, inside baseball, you start to understand, like, why things are structured the way that they are.
Yeah, for sure. You get the you'll play a game and you'll feel like if there's a problem with it, you'll understand almost not immediately, but after playing for a bit, you'll go, oh, that probably, like, got cut, or there was this got revised, but or this was just like someone put this in the last minute because some executive made a decision. My favorite stories are always, oh yes, the CEO's kid came in and thought, oh, wouldn't this be cool to include? And now that's the next sprint plan. We've now got to include this new feature a seven-year-old has told us to include. So hopefully that will be an interesting lens on things.
For my part, to follow that up, I'm a middle school teacher. I teach middle school English, seventh grade, which is like 12-year-olds for Ross, because I know the grades are different between America and other places. So I teach 12-year-olds like how to read and write, which is thrilling. But I have done a decent amount of like scholarship and academic work in that like intersection between video games and literature. Not to brag, wrote a book chapter, did some presentations, and I did also. So a couple of years ago, pilot a club teaching kids how to make video games. Not that I know how to make video games, but we used some like little tools and talked about like just basic principles, mechanics, terminology, things like that. And kind of looking at it from a storytelling perspective, because my background is in like English literature and things like that. I'm a middle school teacher. But obviously, like, I like games. I've been playing games forever. and games that I don't know, this is such a hard question. What sort of games do you like? It's like the same as asking like, oh, what kind of music do you like, you know? So it, like, it's hard to answer, but it's also something that I've been so conflicted with over the last few years that like for years my identity was like video games are literature, and like I love games with like a good story, and I don't care if the gameplay is bad if the story is really, really good. And in more recent years, my brain has broken, and now I like simulation games a lot. So like I started playing like American Truck Simulator and like Bad Things and like automation games that like my brain lights up in this really specific way when I play like Satisfactory and figure out like my pipelines for like creating certain things. So I kind of feel like I'm in both camps in that sense, that I do love a story, I love a role-playing game, but I also like some other things.
I mean, like, my background is in design, specifically narrative design. So yeah, like, I like story, but you don't need to, this is going to sound stupid, I suppose, but you don't need to have an obvious story for to have a story. There's just very, like, it doesn't have to have a narrative that that someone has designed for you to experience.
Right. There's like emergent storytelling and like the story that you bring to it, that like to use Satisfactory as an example. And I know you haven't played Satisfactory because it's on our list, but Satisfactory, like the story is very bare bones. You're just sent off to this planet and told like you're here to like create resources and like,
wait a minute, are you pitching to me right now?
No, that'll come later. But you know, you bring a story to that, you know, you start thinking like, okay, well, who am I and what is my relationship to this company and what am I trying to achieve? Why did they send me off to this other planet? And so those stories kind of get created around games that have very bare bones, minimal stories. And even it's created around games that have very heavy stories, that there are holes that you fill in and things that you imagine for yourself. So no, that doesn't sound silly.
Yeah. And definitely, like I say, with a casual game background, I wasn't starting in the industry to pursue casual games as what I sort of specialize in, or at least mobile games. But it sort of just worked out because, yeah, generally speaking, they're more, I wouldn't say more of a challenge, but they're a different challenge to what a traditional, like, video game would be conceived as. You know, especially on bigger projects where you have, like, multiple designers or programmers who are just working on this very specific feature. You get, like, such a small aspect of a game that you usually work on it on such a big project. When you're working on more, like, indie projects or smaller studios or smaller teams, you get to basically be everything in your role, which means that you have such interesting general skills. And mobile games have a lot of that because there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of studios out there that are making stuff and doing interesting things that they have to generally cover a lot of bases because, you know, not many people do actually care about playing the one combat system in this one mobile game, because as much as they make money, they are also not like appealing to the same audience. So, right. Like I say, different challenge. The other interesting thing as well is like, the audience is not traditionally made up of the same people that play console or PC games. So recently, recently we found from a survey that we did in one of our games that I think it was around 90% of our audience were women. Mm-hmm. I mean, I already knew that it was a majority, but that was quite large of a percentage. And even more so, the percentage of men was lower than the percentage of people who identified as non-binary, which I found really interesting as well. So in my experience, there's different audiences and it's so much more interesting to hear about them rather than just a traditional person here and there. Traditional video game player who, let's be honest, who would be making a podcast right now and be talking about their top 10 games of the year or something.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good segue into talking about the perspectives that we bring to it. And you've talked about that from a design standpoint. And I do want to say too that that statistic of mobile gaming is often majority women. I think that gets overblown sometimes and used in insidious ways where there are statistics that say the same number of men and women play video games. Everybody's always well, women are playing Candy Crush, so it doesn't count. I think that lends itself to that perspective question of that, as a woman, I often have a very different perspective on games than a lot of other people. There are things that I maybe notice and things that are important to me that are not always important to the stereotypical male audience for video games. So I certainly come at this from a feminist perspective and from a queer perspective, and that will certainly be part of our conversations.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much to push into either respect at the moment in terms of challenging norms or whatever, because to be fair, some of the games we're going to pitch, I imagine, are going to push things here and there, so it will be
interesting. I think certainly this first one that we're doing.
Yeah, is that a good segue to move on to it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sweet. So the game that I want to pitch to you today, Cassie, is Immortality. Without reading a Wikipedia article worth of information, Immortality was made by Sam Barlow and I believe a company called
Half Mermaid, I think is his company.
Half Mermaid, that was it, yeah. Sam Barlow, just as a brief introduction to his bibliography. Wow, this sounds really professional now, I say stuff like that. Basically, games that he's worked on before have included stuff a text-based adventure called Isle. What was his big one?
Her Story.
Telling Lies.
Big one. Telling Story, Lies, yes. As well.
Yeah, not quite as big as Her Story, but Immortality, I would say, is probably now considered his biggest work, which is interesting, I would say, because he's in a space where he is technically, in my perspective, where he is an independent creator, but he does have, obviously these publishers and these productions behind the scenes, but he would be, I guess you would consider, an auteur in a way. Yes. Which I don't actually know how much his involvement is on these projects personally, but yeah, if you know his name, he is probably considered an auteur at that point.
You know what kind of game to expect when you play a Sam Barlow game. Not to say that they're not transformative in any way, but I feel like you know what you're getting into, and that's coming from somebody who's never played a Sam Barlow game, so...
Yes. You can definitely feel this sense of he really cares about video as a medium to show and express things, because of all his games are visual in basis, and Immortality is no different. Immortality is sort of an FMV game in a way of, FMV games. God, I've just realized how old those are because they were old when I was young. But basically what is it? Proper video recordings that can be interacted with in some way. Usually they were point and click adventure games.
Right. I feel like Night Trap is the touchstone, the one that people know, partly because of the controversy. But yeah, it's
yes.
It was kind of that half step of we don't have very good video game graphics, but we want to do these things. So we're going to film videos and put it in there.
Yeah, no, exactly. That is probably the best description of it. And yeah, his last few works have been around that sort of format of using video as a way to tell and explore the story. So an Immortality. So to pitch it, or at least give a premise on it, you don't really play anyone. You play yourself, I suppose, in a way. Someone who has been given access to three films that were lost to the time and have just sort of come back. They don't really give you much of a premise in terms of why you're doing this. It does very much just feel like, hey, if you wanted to play this game, this is just you playing this, right? And these three films all had this character called Marissa Marcel as the lead actress in each of them. And it's sort of played as a, this actually happened in history type of thing. So, you know, it's like, oh, this actress from the, like, 60s who then made her first debut film and then made one in the 70s when a tragic thing happened and then she didn't make one until the 90s. So it tries to make you feel like it's very much a realistic scenario. And yeah, you sort of, you're given a clip of an interview that the actress gave to like a night show host, a TV talk show host. And from there, you can interact with that clip. You can pause it, you can fast forward it, rewind it. You can just let it play. It's very much like video editing software or playback software, like video playing software, sorry. Yeah, it allows you to basically scrub through the footage in a way. And it's not that interesting, right? Just to think, oh, you just look through a bunch of footage. Great. What you can do is you'll look through the footage. And when you see something interesting in the scene, there's a tool that you can click and it will allow you to like interact with moments of that frame. So it's just like, you know, in this picture, if you see Marissa Marcel's face and you click on her face, you'll be sort of like transitioned to another clip that includes her face. So then you're given this whole new clip that you can play through, and then you can start doing the same things with this new clip. The whole premise being like, you will eventually start getting these pieces, and these aren't like chronologically inserted. They're just like randomly pulled. I'm not really sure how it figures that out, but you sort of just go from one movie to another at times. You go to some interview to other interviews. There's not many interviews, but it's mainly the films. And there will be at any point during those films, and you'll encounter like new objects, new characters, and then you can interact with them to like, I don't know, there's a knife in this one scene, and then it's used, then there's a knife, a completely different knife in another film, but there's enough of that sort of like textual connection that allows you to jump from point to point. And I guess the thing that you're just trying to do is just figure out, the whole premise, of course, that is the mystery of who is Marissa or Marcel, what happened to her, because she sort of disappeared for 20 years and there's never been seen since.
Okay, because I was going to ask, and I'm sure it's a difficult question to answer, of like, what is the point? Because, you know, if you're just watching these video clips, without that main focus, I guess if you are trying to like solve a mystery of a person, that's kind of the hook of the game.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the mystery is the whole point of, yeah, like, oh, these mysterious mysterious films have just been like, they've reemerged into the spotlight again, and you now have the chance to sift through them and figure out, oh, what happened to her? Because it's not just the film clips. So you do see like moments whenever the camera's rolling, so before scenes are playing and after them, and sometimes in between, like what is it, behind the scenes stuff. So you'll see like stuff B-roll. B-roll, but also like scouting out for like filming locations and stuff. So you'll see sometimes like, oh, so this will be the scene where like they're in the apartment, and then this will happen here, and you know, things like that.
I am intrigued by immortality. So like, obviously I had heard of it before we decided to do it for this because it has won a number of awards and kind of been critically acclaimed since it came out. But sort of the thing that started this was that Ross had tweeted that he finished it and that he was like, wasn't really hot on it. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, because you're the first person I've heard that said something bad about this game, or not bad in a sense, but you get what I mean, that like I've heard like something critical about it necessarily. And that's not to say that that's not out there, because I don't think that I'm necessarily like hooked into video game criticism in that world just as much as I have been in the past. But yeah, I like something divisive, and I think something divisive works for this format really well. So I'm kind of curious to see what I feel about it.
Yeah, like I would say it's one of those games where it's sort of, I mean, the easiest comparison is to a film or a TV series, right? Because it takes heavily from them. But it's that thing of sometimes you're just playing because you want to see what happens, or, you know, there is a lot of talk around it. So you're like, oh, there's must be something really good here. And I think it's one of those things where once I finished playing it, I was done with it. I was happy to be done with it, but I still, even though I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I would, because yeah, I heard the praise as well. I still think it's interesting enough that, like, even if I didn't get what I wanted out of it, you know, someone else might. And that's where you come in,
right,
Cassie, where it's like, you know, I think it's very interesting enough to, like, play. And it's a good, like, this is why I would pitch it, right? It's still, I don't have such a high opinion of it, but I would say it's still worth people taking a try of it.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm curious to see where I fall in on it. So I know a little bit about it just because I've watched some YouTube videos of people like kind of trying to introduce and show it off a little bit. I do also follow Natalie Watson on Twitter, who worked on it. She's part of Half Mermaid. She used to be at Waypoint Vice, and I liked some of the stuff that she did, so I follow her on Twitter. That's not to say that I have any kind of personal connection to the game. I just follow somebody on Twitter, but obviously I've seen a lot about the game just because of that.
Yeah,
you're making a face. I mean,
well, disclaimer on my end, technically, my lecturer at uni for narrative and video games, he worked with Sam Barlow on an unreleased, what is it called? The Vampire series. Oh, Legacy of Cain, that was it.
That's a huge ethical issue. I don't know if we can do this game, Ross.
I mean, I'm critical of his work, so that clearly means I'm like trying to create a conversation here, and I'm going to get paid lots of money for that.
So the only question that I kind of have before going into it is, so like I've said, I've seen a little bit of the game. I've seen some of the clips. Are there any warnings, and I don't like to use the term trigger warnings because I think that's kind of overblown and sticky in some ways, but are there any trigger warnings that you would give me before going into this game?
Oh, a bunch. And the game does
okay,
it
yeah.
At the beginning, to be fair, like, to give credit to it, it's very upfront with its own topics and sensitivities. One which I found funny, just because I didn't think of this as a potential thing, but that's more on me, was blasphemy against Catholicism. Is
I'm good with
one
that.
Of the big things.
Down with blasphemy.
Yeah, I'm sure you're fine with that. It's just because, I mean, it's weird because, like, not too much of a spoiler, but like the first film, because it's part of the plot, but not really. The first film that you get in this game is based on a 1800s novel, I believe, called The Monk, which is very much against, well, I think it was very critical of Catholicism. So it's funny that it's like blasphemy actually is coming because it's trying to adapt something from like over 100 years ago. So sure. Yeah, it was one of those sensitivities where I'm like, okay, that's weird in my mind, but whatever. But yes, obviously there's sexual assault is definitely a big one. Nudity is a big one. I wouldn't say like it's necessarily rife, but it's like core parts of character or plot, which, yeah, I mean, I don't know how critical you want me to be about this until you actually play it and then we discuss, but yeah.
I think I'd like to play it and get into that, but that was one of the things that when I had seen some clips of it, I was like, you know, it's always a question of, is this essential to the plot or is this kind of gratuitous? Is this unnecessary nudity? And yeah, yeah. But we can talk about that when we get in depth with the game.
Yeah. I would largely say, just as a sort of point, I think it's trying to, without going too much into it, I think it's trying to exemplify the films that the style of films and the decades that it was set in and trying to reference those problematic parts of those times.
Yeah.
Without it necessarily just trying to hide away from it. But whether that's credible or not, I guess will be interesting to see your perspective on it when you actually play it. So, yeah.
That's a hard thing with like criticizing or even satirizing some kind of media, that like you kind of have to get down into the gutter with it and to maybe become complicit in some of the things that you're criticizing. We'll see about that. I will say I'm a little wary about the like sexual assault stuff in it, because that has been something that I have like walked out of movies over, which I'll tell that story. I was 16 or 17, I used to work in a movie theater, and for our holiday party, we decided to watch The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Didn't know anything about it going into it. I walked out after the second rape scene. I believe that there was another one upcoming that I did not get to. But obviously, those were not the best circumstances for me to consume any kind of media.
No.
But I'm a little sensitive to that stuff in media, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm not willing to play this game.
Yeah, I would again say it's more to do with that first film, the majority of it.
Okay.
In that second film as well, but yeah. I'm not going to talk too much more about
it. Sure. And then the last question I think I have, which is maybe going to sound stupid. Will it be clear when I finish this game?
Without spoiling it, yes.
Okay, that's fine. That's enough.
I also, like, that's a critique I have in a way, but yeah, again, not for this, okay. I think.
Yeah, that's just, in the little bit that I've seen of it, there was some speculation about, like, how does this end? How does this conclude? So we'll see. And for the record, we're not promising to necessarily finish these games that are pitched to us. We're going to try to play a substantial portion of them, but, like, if time doesn't work out, or if, for example, we really hate it and need to quit it, but feel like we can have a substantial conversation and an informed conversation about it, that is something that may occur.
Yes, like, especially with the sensitivity thing, if you were like, no, this is getting too much on that, I'm like, I wouldn't blame you. Like,
sure.
If it's something that's not for you, then yeah. And if you don't like how it plays, not Immortality, but any game, then yeah, I'm not going to say you have to play this forever till you get to
And there's degrees. So, yeah. There's like, I don't necessarily enjoy this, but I'll continue playing it because I want to see where the story goes or something like that. But yeah, so we'll see how that works out. So that's the idea. And so Ross has pitched me on Immortality. I'm cautiously optimistic, and we will...
You accepted my challenge.
On our episode format, kind of, this one's going to be weird because it's like our intro episode and our pitch. Our following episode will be our longer, in-depth, spoilery discussion of Immortality, and then at the end, I will pitch a game that is yet to be determined to Ross for Ross to play, and we'll see if we can continue alternating off like that. On that list that we made, it was like 40 games that Ross was like, you should really play this, and like 10 that I was like, ooh, how about this one? So we'll see if we continue alternating or we just figure it out based on the schedule. But that's the idea.
Yeah, sounds great.
Cool.
Can't wait to see what you pitch me and how you think about Immortality.